This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
College holds a mythic place in American culture, but there are stories you won't hear on the campus tours.
The higher-ups are concerned about one thing, and that is avoiding scandal.
I'm Margot Gray. On the new podcast, Campus Files, we cover everything from rigged admissions to the drama of Greek life and student protests. Listen to and follow Campus Files, an Odyssey original podcast. Available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Follow. Swinging a high fly ball to right down the line. It's in the corner. If it's fair, it's going to leave the yard. That's a home run. A towering drive by Pete Crow Armstrong. And this ball game is tied 1-1. The 0-1 to Crow Armstrong. Swinging a drive center field and deep. Back goes Edmund. Back near the fence. It's got a chance. Gone. Pete Crow Armstrong with a long home run. His second of the game. And the kid from Sherman Oaks, which is about 30 miles away from here, is putting on a show in front of friends and family.
The Score Midday Show, 10-2 on 670 The Score.
As called by Pat Hughes, Ron Coomer, the gang, having a great trip, I imagine. Winners of 2 out of 3 with a stop in L.A. And if you don't like that sunny weather, how about some more sunny weather in San Diego, where they're hoping to rain down on the Padres for the second time in just over a week's time.
It's about one of the best stops on the Cubs tour. I can tell you that because the hotel that they sometimes stay at is the one that is attached to the ballpark in San Diego. Let me tell you, there is nothing better than waking up in the hotel, walking down a couple of hallways into a baseball park to go to work. That's a neat trick.
What's the name of it? The district? It's
the ballpark there?
Yeah, I forget what it's called.
But it's probably like Tony Gwynn Alley or something like that.
But I love that area.
Dave Winfield Row.
It's kind of reminiscent of Wrigleyville in the fact that after the game, your options are endless.
Yeah.
There's stuff to do.
Oh, it's one of the best stops.
Trouble to get into.
Yeah, there is trouble to get into. But yeah, this is one of the most popular trips. Like wives, kids, friends are all on the plane because it's a beautiful trip through the West Coast.
Especially this time of year when it hasn't quite warmed up yet here. It's like, let's get away and get to some 80-plus degree weather.
Yes.
As we're broadcasting live from the Score Hyundai Studios, brought to you by your local Hyundai dealers. It is Mark Grody, Marshall Harris. Middays here on the Score. Layla Brahimi has the day off. She'll be back tomorrow, though. Don't worry.
Getting her teeth did today.
She's handling business, which is what the Cubs did against the Los Angeles Dodgers. And speaking of business, you know, it's not just on the field. There's also off the field things that have to be discussed, perused over. It seems like what's going to have Cubs fans and perhaps the front office in a chokehold, or maybe not the front office because they've already decided what they're going to do or what they're willing to do, is Kyle Tucker and what happens with him with free agency looming because he's in the last year of his deal. And if the Cubs don't get some type of extension done in season, which is looking unlikely just because that man's probably going to use leverage to get the most money he can get, it's a one and done deal for Kyle Tucker at this point. And I wonder if the Cubs are resilient enough to wake up and realize the game has changed and we need to get on board with how things get done today.
It's time. I've been talked about this a little bit on Friday night. It's time. It is time for the Cubs to commit to another superstar player. They have not made the playoffs in the last 4 years. I've been saying this forever. When things changed with the Cubs organization and they started going in a winning organization starting in 2015, I thought the organization changed, the mentality of the fans changed, everything changed, and right now The fans continue to do their part, and now it's time for the front office to catch up. With this team, this organization, with the resources that they have, 4 years in a row not in the playoffs, and again, their last playoff run, or not run, but the last time they were in the playoffs, was the pandemic-shortened season of 60 games. It was a weird year, and then they got Sandy Alcantara'd in the first game of that playoff series, as we talked about a little bit earlier. So it's time. It is time to do this again, to bring in an elite or pay for an elite player.
Maybe an elite hitter, maybe an elite pitcher through trade after the Justin Steele injury. But as far as Kyle Tucker goes, listen to what happened on Baseball Tonight. Buster Olney, Jeff Passan making a prediction about which team will land Kyle Tucker for next season.
You know what I'm going to do here, Buster? I'm going to give some hope to Chicago Cubs fans. Because we have seen, let's parallel the Cubs and the Blue Jays. The Cubs have gone, they haven't gone after Ohtani or Soto with the same level of fervor that they should have. But it was because Tom Ricketts is unwilling to spend. And that narrative, once it starts chasing you, and once it starts bumming out your fans, I think it gets to owners after time. And I don't think Tom Ricketts wants his I don't think he wants his reputation to be the cheap Cubs owner. If you have the chance to sign this guy after giving up Isak Paredes and Cam Smith and Hayden Wisniewski for him, and all you get back if you don't sign him is not even a first round draft pick. I mean, to me, it screams that this is a situation in which Tom Ricketts has to go outside of his comfort zone and keep a franchise type player around, because we see the impact, Buster, that he's had on that lineup. It's profound. I mean, the Cubs are a completely different team with him in the middle of that order than they are otherwise.
Again, that's Jeff Passan on Baseball Tonight. And yeah, you cannot deny the man's impact just looking at the box score on a daily basis or looking overall at the WAR numbers. Whatever metric you want to use, I would encourage the eye test, because I still think that works to a degree. Just use your eyes and see what's happening in front of you with Kyle Tucker specifically. But I like the idea, even though I don't know if it's true or not, that Tom Ricketts is getting upset that the fans are upset that he won't spend money. Mm-hmm. I like that. That's the kind of pressure that needs to be applied. We always talk about apply pressure. That's the type of pressure that needs to be applied. I don't care if you have to shame an owner into spending more money to get the players that they need to compete with everyone else. Whatever needs to happen, make it happen.
I'd say what Jeff Passan just said was pretty shaming when he said, he didn't say he's a cheap owner, but he did say Tom Ricketts doesn't want to be known. Or does he want to be known as the cheap owner? Does he want to start to head into that realm? And that is probably not what he wants his legacy to be as a Cubs fan and owner.
Yeah, not only that, though, this idea that owners can be shamed to this degree, I don't necessarily agree with Jeff Passan's take on that.
Well, we have the one on the South Side has never been shamed by anybody.
It's not just one owner on the South Side. You can go to Pittsburgh and talk about the Nuttings. There are many, many.
The Bengals owner for cross sports?
If you want to cross sports. Yeah. I'm saying I think there's baseball owners who are very content to play the small market game of, I'm going to give you some guys. Hopefully you can make the most of it and see what happens. I mean, everybody wants to follow the Rays, the Brewers, the Guardians, other mid-level market teams that are finding ways to at least be competitive and be in the mix. But I think the overall point from Cubs fans and me as an observer is, I don't want to hear about being in the mix. I want go-for-it seasons. And it seems like this is trying to be a go-for-it season,
right?
But you've come up short in some areas, and whether it's the Alex Bregman, and I think we'll find out a lot between now and the trade deadline if the Cubs continue playing at this rate of baseball they're playing right now. But if they don't go get more help, specifically bullpen, big arm help, and a frontline starter help, you'll know where the Cubs stand.
No, you're right about that. And hey, and there's been a couple texters said, hey, well, can't we just enjoy this? Paul Sullivan, I had him on recently. He's like, yo, can't we just enjoy what is happening within the season? Yeah, but guess what? I want to see sustained success too. So two things can be happening simultaneously. We can be enjoying watching the Cubs win, and we could praise the fact that Kyle Tucker is here and that Jed Hoyer made a move to get him here. But I want to see it continue to be that way. Do the Cubs not believe in sustained success anymore? Have fans gone back, reverted back to, oh man, we'll take the magical seasons? Because that, Marshall, that was the problem with the Cubs for so many years of my life. That in, like, my sports consciousness goes to 1984, okay? 84, they win the division. 85, all the arms blow up. 89 was a fluke season. Although it was fun as hell to watch, it was not a sustainable thing. 1998, they win the wild card. Not a sustainable thing. We know what happened in 2003. It ended up not being sustainable, which I was really a tragedy. 07 and 08, they get swept out of the playoffs in both of those Lou Piniella seasons. And then it brings us to what are the winning years. You had that sustained success for several years, and now we're talking about, after all that starting in 2015, now we're talking about middling this thing, and let's just have these surprise pop-up seasons like 84 and 89 and all those seasons I just mentioned. I don't want to go back to that. I don't think Cubs fans want to go back to that, and I wish the Cubs didn't want to go back to that, because that's what they've gone back to. That's where they are right now. We're going to build it all up for one season, and quite frankly, they didn't build it up enough if they're going all in on one season.
I think your last point is the point is there to be made about if you're going to go all in, go all in. And when you see that Alex Bregman is a Boston Red Sox because they were not close, they were not a top one team, top two team, arguably not a top three contestant in the services for Alex Bregman, that tells the story. And so now you're talking about Tucker. What about the possibility that he would stay beyond? That means a big check's got to be written by Cubs ownership. Lance Berdzowski.
Mm-hmm.
Lance Berdzowski.
Yes.
On Marquee's Cubs Daily podcast, he wanted to know what would it cost to keep Kyle Tucker. So he just straight up just called his agency.
I actually spoke to somebody today at Excel Sports Management, which is Tucker's agency, and I made them give me an estimate for Tucker's eventual contract, whether it be in free agency or an in-season extension. And the number they gave was 10 years, $475 million. Sure, it's a biased source within his agency. Of course, they're going to promote him, absolutely. But I thought it was actually somewhat reasonable. And I think it's a good over-under for what he eventually will receive. Now, when you get three or four other big market teams in there, which I think Excel would be very inclined to do instead of letting the Cubs bid against themselves with an extension, that number could obviously move up. But I think that kind of money is what Tom Ricketts and the Cubs front office should be thinking about if they want to compete with the other large market teams on Kyle Tucker.
That was Lance Berdzowski on the Cubs Daily podcast from Marquee talking about a 10-year, $475 million contract, which I was like, oh, is that all it is? Because I was expecting the first number to be five.
Yeah.
So I'm good. Pay that man his money, keep him for the next 10 years, and have this thing Mark Grody was talking to me about, sustained success.
Oh?
That's one way to start that, right?
That is one way to start that. That is a great way to start that. It's crazy that we're looking at 10 years and $475 million and saying that's a bargain. But under $500 million, you're right. There's a couple other things here, too. Kyle Tucker was comped to Juan Soto over the weekend by Boog Shambi on the broadcast. That's a Cubs employee talking about that he is being comped to one of the best players in the world. And then you had Carter Hawkins on the station last week saying that he's an elite hitter. So I don't understand, like, what more you want than this guy. Checks all the boxes.
I believe those are messages to Cubs ownership, just confirming what we all know to be true.
You think that's what you think? Carter Hawkins, like, hey, yo, he's an elite hitter. Boog Shambi's like, hey, check this out. I got this Juan Soto comp for you.
Yeah, I think that's important that everyone from the top on down understands exactly how important it is. And you mentioned sustained success. Another way to do that is by signing your young players before they even get close to free agency through their arbitration years and add a couple of years. We've seen it recently with a bunch of different guys. And Pete Crow Armstrong, they're talking about him possibly having contract discussions, right, in the neighborhood of $75 million. And you're like, well, he hasn't done anything yet. He had a good back half of last season. If you're good at actually doing the projections on everything, just remember this. Jackson Merrill, fresh off a rookie season, just got a 9-year, $135 million extension with the Padres. When he was 22 years old, Corbin Carroll had played 32 major league games and got an 8-year, $111 million extension. If you want to go way back, just remember, just 6 games into his major league career, Tampa Bay, which is closer to maybe what they're modeling their payroll style after, 6 games as a major league baseball player, he got a 6-year, $17.5 million contract that included club options, potentially making the deal worth $44 million over 9 seasons. Now, that was back in 2008. The price of those young players has clearly crossed into nine-figure territory with the contract. But I think that's what we should be looking at for Pete Crow Armstrong, is a year which takes us a couple of years, maybe with an option, maybe not, into his free agent years. Pay more now to get a good 8 to 10 year chunk of PCA's career.
In the year, as a Cubs comp, in the year 2013, Anthony, this is going to sound so petty or so small compared to what some of the numbers you just talked about. Anthony Rizzo signed a 7-year, $43 million deal. Now, when, you know, at that point, Rizzo, he was struggling. He was struggling. He was kind of back and forth. He was not the Anthony Rizzo that we came to know with the Cubs, but that was a shrewd as hell move by the Cubs, and that is on Theo and Jed's watch. So I think that they understand that they have to do it. I think that what they need to know now, and they tried to do it, I think, with some of the other core players and were not able to. What I think they need to realize now is that you need to pay the going price and what PCA, I'm not saying what PCA wants, but get a little bit closer to that territory. But that was, like, you think about that. That's crazy, thinking about Rizzo, 7 years and $41 million, and he outplayed that contract fast.
If you don't want to be the Yankees, if you don't want to be, I guess in some ways, the Dodgers, the Red Sox, the biggest market teams signing big free agent contracts, Matt Chapman with the Giants going back, and we find out the Cubs just offered him a 1-year deal. Come on, man. You've got to, if you don't want to do it that way, you've got to do it the other way with extreme prejudice. And you've got to say, we're paying our prospects more money just to make sure we have them in line. And if you only get 3 out of 4, the Atlanta Braves might be the best model. Mm-hmm. What they gave Ronald Acuna Jr., what they gave Ozzie Albies, and a host of other players on the front end, knowing that, hey, at least we have you under control. Get PCA under control. I mean, you have him under control, but get plus years and don't have his last year of arbitration. You shouldn't be going to arbitration with PCA.
Man, PCA, he might just, like, he's just got enough guts and flair and all the whole thing. He might just wait. Who knows?
All right, we'll see what happens. On the other side, we revisit Augusta and the beautiful weekend that was. Golf Week senior writer David Dusick joins us to talk all things Masters. It's Mark Grody, Marshall Harris, 670 The Score, middays.
The long journey is over. McIlroy has his masterpiece.
That experience, going through the hardships of tough losses and all that, I've literally made my dreams come true today.
The Score Midday Show, 10 to 2 on 670 The Score.
He is a champion once again, a major champion after an 11-year major drought. Rory McIlroy needed a playoff, but doesn't matter. He got the job done to talk about that Masters victory and the career Grand Slam. Now joining us on the Circa Resort and Casino Hotline is Golf Week senior writer David Dusick. You can find him over on the app formerly known as Twitter, at GolfWeek_Dusick. That's D-U-S-E-K. And David, what a Sunday that we're going to remember for a long time as someone who jumped on the roller coaster and rode up and down with Rory McIlroy, especially on that back nine.
We're not here to talk about Pete Crow Armstrong. We're talking golf. Okay. Yeah. I can talk golf.
We're going to leave you a little. We're going to leave you some Cubs time. We're going to leave you some Cubs time.
We'll talk Cubs.
Yeah. We can go deep on the bullpen. We can talk about lots of things, fellas. But
can
I
the
think
Cubs go deep on the bullpen, though? That's the question.
That's the problem. Can we also just, I know, can we quit playing the Dodgers? I'm sick of the Dodgers. I'm so sick of it.
They took two out of three, man. Come on.
Good news. There's only one more series with the Dodgers, and it's only a two-game set.
It's been a long time coming for what we got yesterday, guys. It was one of, I've been asked by a lot of people over the last, 12 hours or so, was that the biggest Masters that we've had? Is that the most, emotional outpouring? And for me, the only one that really is sort of still in the conversation, there's two. 2019, we had Tiger Woods finishing the comeback and being there and seeing the outpouring of emotion from himself, from the fans, seeing, what it meant for him to embrace his kids, for him, to share that with his son, Charlie, who's an aspiring golfer, was really, really special. And that was about as loud as I've personally ever heard Augusta National get. Rory falling down to his knees after everything he's been through for over a decade with people like me asking him, when is it finally going to happen? When are you going to win a Masters? When are you going to complete the career Grand Slam? You could see every bit of that relief and frustration, all of that pour out of him on the 18th green. And it was unbelievable. Even if you weren't a huge golf fan before that, I think you can understand now why, for those of us who follow golf week in and week out, it's really, really easy to be a Rory McIlroy fan.
Sports is hard at the highest level. It's stressful and it's not always fun. I've never seen that amount, a simultaneously happy and actually, I won't even say it, he was more relieved of stress than happy, I think, at that very moment, wasn't he, Dave?
Yeah, and that's what he said in his post-round press conference, is that he had been asked about this for so long. He had so many players, Tiger Woods, Jack Nicklaus, all the greats who were still living, basically saying, you're going to win this golf tournament. You're going to win multiple green jackets, which is a lot to heap on a person. That weight of the expectation that he has on himself, plus historically great figures who are in the Hall of Fame saying, you're going to do this. That's a lot for him to carry around. And he said as much afterwards. This is really a burden in some ways that has been lifted off of his shoulders. Yes. When he came into the media center, when he was wearing his green jacket and you could just see the pride that was in him, the very first thing he said is, before we get going, I want to ask all of you a question. What are we talking about next year? you don't have to ask me anymore about what is it going to take to win a Masters? When are you going to complete the career Grand Slam? It's done. And done with quite a bit of drama as well coming down the stretch.
Is Rory McIlroy just going to go get fat now? Are we going to see? Is he going to be on the senior tour next year? It feels like he's a made man now. He can do whatever he wants.
He can certainly do whatever he wants. That sounds like the plan is for him to head back to Northern Ireland, to the little town of Hollywood, which is where he's from. He wants to see his parents. He wants to celebrate with the folks back home, which is great. He's going back to Jupiter, Florida, which is where his home base is now. I've been checking in with the folks in New Orleans, so I'll be going a week from now to New Orleans. He is, at least now, scheduled to play alongside Shane Lowry. They're going to be the defending champions at the Zurich Classic, which is the only team event on the PGA Tour schedule. They won that thing last year, and they had a good time in New Orleans after that. But I think we're going to have to give Rory a little bit of grace here for the next several weeks while he enjoys and savors what he's accomplished.
This wasn't just about Rory winning the Masters. I mean, that was the main point. But also, he'd gone over a decade without winning a major. And you forget sometimes, he's only 35 years old. And he was in this golf prodigy / young, the next star, the biggest star mode for quite some time. And does this kind of close the chapter on maybe what his legacy is now that he has the Grand Slam and can revitalize some of his other things that he wants to do in golf?
I think that if you ask Rory, what does he want to achieve now that he's done this, I think in all seriousness that we're going to have to give him a little bit of grace because it's going to be really hard for him emotionally and mentally to come back down to earth from what he's achieved. And he has earned the right to enjoy this for as long as he chooses. The tournament that I think that he is going to really go after the most for the rest of the season will be the British Open this year, which will be played in July. And that's going to be played in Northern Ireland. Again, he had an opportunity to win that one in 2019, and the pressure just totally came apart. Shane Lowry, his good buddy, won it at Royal Portrush. We're going back to Portrush. It would mean the world to him And he's already sort of well on his way to earning player of the year. This is his third win already. And, you know, we're still in April at this point. So Rory's setting up a monster year at this point. I think he really wants to win at Port Rush. He'd love to win more championships, but he was before today already in the Hall of Fame. Like he was going to get there when he's with what he's already accomplished, multiple FedEx Cups, four-time major winner before yesterday. He already had everything set up to go into the Hall of Fame. Now he joins that really elite group. Now he is amongst the immortals in the game. We're talking Nicklaus, we're talking Sarazen, all these players that, you know, there are only five of them before Rory that had won the career Grand Slam. He's in some really rarefied air. Arnold Palmer never did it. Lee Trevino never did it. Phil Mickelson hasn't done it, and I don't think he's going to do it. To win all four majors in a career is something that is unbelievably hard. Rory had talked about that, that it's he now can sort of just get that off of his back. I think that we're going to see some really good golf from him, but I think it may take a while for him to come back down to earth.
Yeah, you were talking about how you don't know that you've necessarily heard the crowds like that at the Masters. Have you ever seen it so electric as it was on Saturday with some of the shots that were being made? And when DeChambeau was in it, like he was the guy that I feared. I thought he was going to eventually take over in that tournament. But Saturday was just, even for somebody like me, who's not a big-time golf fan, I was on the edge of my seat the whole time on Saturday.
Saturday was ripping. There's no question about it. To me, you know, being around the grounds and such, it was Sunday morning. It was Sunday morning because the leaders didn't go off until 2:30 Eastern time. The place was absolutely electric right from the jump. You know, everybody was looking at Rory and they were looking at Bryson and everything that those players represent, from the PGA Tour versus the LIV guys, from the Bryson beating Rory head-to-head last year at the U.S. Open at Pinehurst and Rory being just devastated after that loss. The whole thing, as we've talked about, with Rory going after the Grand Slam and Bryson trying to deny him all of that. You had some other players that we thought maybe they could get in the mix if both of those guys sort of come back to earth. We didn't really, you know, we haven't even said the name Justin Rose.
Yeah.
How much class does this guy have?
Totally.
You know, this is the second time he's lost the Masters now in a playoff. And he was tremendous and he was graceful. And Rory, I think, felt in some ways very bittersweet about the win. They're European Ryder Cup teammates. They're good friends. They live in the same areas. You know, if someone's going to win in golf, someone has to lose. And it's tough going. But Justin Rose showed a lot of coolness, and a lot of grit, and a lot of class in the way that he comported himself. There was a great picture of Justin Rose's wife giving Rory a hug, saying how proud she was of him after he signed a scorecard yesterday. So great karma and good stuff all the way around. But to me, honestly, Sunday before they even teed off, it was like lightning was in the air, and there was sun everywhere you looked. It was great.
David Dusick, the senior writer for Golf Week, explaining exactly what the atmosphere, what the conditions were like for this year's version of the Masters, which had people, golf fans and non-golf fans, just casual fans, I'll say, excited as well about anytime something as big as Rory McIlroy's career accomplishment, the career Grand Slam happens, you're going to be excited. Meanwhile, I know you're excited about another thing, and I just want to address it. The Cubs off to maybe a better start than a lot of people expected. I understand you live in Connecticut. You have the W that you fly at your own house, and you have some type of interesting prop bet going on with the Cubs?
Prop bet going on with the Cubs? I don't know about a prop bet going on with the Cubs.
Okay. Sorry. I misheard. I
would love to get some prop bets going on if that is, from what I can see, a Mississippi State sweatshirt. Is that a Mississippi State hoodie?
I am a Mississippi State graduate, Hail State. That we live and die by it.
You guys can see that?
Oh, I see the LSU. I see the LSU. LSU.
Do you guys still play football?
Don't do that. Don't do that. That's disrespectful. That's disrespectful.
As long as you guys don't have those freaking cowbells, then we can go just fine.
We have the cowbell.
Like I said, I'm heading down to New Orleans. You're welcome to join me. All the gumbo you can eat.
I'm good on the gumbo for now, according to my cardiologist and everybody else. But no, that's good times. I don't know if they still play baseball at LSU or if they can or if they have guys.
I'm very much looking forward to the Cubs season. What I truly hope doesn't happen, and we saw this from Rory McIlroy at the Masters in years past. Wonderful start, only to fade in June and July, and then what the hell we're doing come like late August, and it's disappointing. But I am so excited to watch the team every night. It's been great. I really was worried after coming back from Japan you know, with the team and just what we saw over there. It was like, oh my gosh, we're 2 games back in the loss column before opening day has even gone on. Like, this, only the Cubs would do this. And to see them night after night play well, loving what we're seeing. Just I don't want to break karma. So it's all been good so far.
Did you go to Japan?
I did wake up. My son Charlie and I are both rabid Cubs fans. I've been going since my grandfather used to take me out to Wrigley when family's all from the Chicago area. So I have been a big Cubs fan all my life. So trust me, I can tell you exactly where in the middle of the night I was in 2016 here on the East Coast when we won. It's been great. Now, like I said, I'm pretty sure we are the only family in Connecticut that flies the W. It's out there right now.
Well, I misspoke when I said prop, because I thought it was a prop bet, but an actual prop, as in a foul ball signed by somebody famous, I'm assuming Cubs related.
And he's gonna get so I took my son to Cooperstown these many years ago, and you know, we were going through the car places and stuff like that, and let's just say that there is a former Rookie of the Year and then MVP who we bought a ball.
KB.
Sounds like Chris Bryant, yeah.
Someone misplaced that ball in baseball card. Tweren't me.
You lost it?
No, not him.
Not me.
Your son?
Not me. Not the. Somebody else misplaced the Chris Bryant baseball card.
Oh, no.
That's not it.
The rookie card.
That's bad.
That's really bad.
Well, you know what? But he's kind of faded away anyway. I don't know who Chris Bryant is anymore.
Wow.
So
you're disrespecting.
That's Chris spelled with a C now instead of a K.
Okay, y'all are doing too much.
No, I personally love. I covered Chris Bryant. I was doing Cubs pre and post then, so I do love. He could not be a better guy.
In all seriousness, I mean, this is one of the things that people who are Cub fans can appreciate, I think, what Rory and his fans have gone through, because every year you get expectations. And for so many years, those are denied. And sometimes you get closer to it, and you're in the playoffs, and you get disappointed. And some years you're like, okay, this just isn't happening. You missed the cut. And I don't know if it's the same thing, because we're talking about generations of people who never knew what it was like for the Cubs to win a World Series. There have been people who have been ride or die with Rory McIlroy now for the better part of a decade and a half. And when you get so much success like he had early in his career, winning 4 major championships, when he finally breaks through and he wins a U.S. Open Congressional Country Club the following year, like, he's breaking through, he's beating Phil Mickelson and Ricky Fowler, and he's winning a PGA championship, and then the next, you know, he's getting another PGA, he wins a British Open at Royal Liverpool 2014, and you're like, oh, we are on the Rory train, and we are just, you know, one after another. And then to go for a decade and to get heartbreak, you know, and to get disappointment and to get other things that just don't go your way, and the quality and the depth of the quality, it's sort of like every year having to go against the Yankees and the Dodgers, and every other year, like, the Red Sox decide they're going to break out the checkbook and they're going to do something, and oh my god, where the hell did the Phillies, you know, and the Nats come from? And all of a sudden the Houston Astros decide that they're going to remember how to play baseball for a couple of years, and bang on trash cans, and
we get it.
There you are, just trying to cheer on your fans and just trying to, like, root for your team. Man. And then when they finally break through, it's literally like, and I said to my wife today, like, the sun is just shining a little bit brighter today.
You're right.
And it just, everything is that much better. And it's why we just love sports sometimes.
Well, that is a perfect illustration, along with what happened at the Masters. David Dusick, we appreciate you stopping by. The Golf Week senior writer, thanks so much for joining us on Score Middays.
Thanks a lot, guys.
Thanks, David.
All right. That taking us down memory road, bringing up all the nostalgic feelings that time.
Man.
David Dusick, I get it. I get it. Speaking of nostalgia, if you watched the game last night between the Cubs and the Dodgers, Nico Hoerner is going to get you in your feels, because he had a range of emotions displayed as he was mic'd up by the ESPN crew. Robbie Triano's put together a little supercut we'll share with you on the other side. It's Middays on the Score with Mark.
The Benny's Beverage Depot attendance game. If you can't find it at Benny's, just drop down on your knees and sob uncontrollably.
The Score Midday Show, 10 to 2 on 670 The Score.
Wait, what? That's crazy.
Pat's extra hilarious this year, by the way.
That is, he's, you know, 4C freaking them. They Hall of Famers, they roll differently.
Yeah, they do.
And Pat Hughes is rolling right now, and we appreciate
Benny's
it.
Beverage Depot attendance game. If you can't find it at Benny's, just drop down on your knees and sob uncontrollably.
Get Pat a beer.
Yeah, because if it's, yeah. Wow, that's amazing. Broadcasting live from the Score Hyundai Studios, brought to you by your local Hyundai dealers. It is Score Middays. Mark Grody, Marshall Harrison here with you on a Monday, getting you acclimated for the week. Layla Rahima will be back with us tomorrow.
Mañana.
So if you're missing Layla, she'll be back doing her thing. In the meantime, ESPN Sunday Night Baseball, that is a thing. It's very prominent because it's your chance to be on the national stage. All the other games, in theory, are over and done with. And Nico Hoerner, I guess he was voluntold, whatever. He ended up being mic'd up for this game. We have a super chunk of Nico Hoerner's mic'd up experience during the Dodgers top of the lineup, starting with one Shohei Ohtani at the plate.
And Nico Hoerner is at second base and wearing a microphone, and we'll let this plate appearance play out before we engage with Nico.
Maybe not the guy you want at the plate while you're talking to the booth.
It's called court awareness.
That's right.
Nico's got it. A difficult play. Obviously, Nico Hoerner was involved in it. I tell you one thing, I was about to start saying, somebody call it, but I didn't want to interfere with anything that was going on.
But Nico did the right thing right there. You go as hard as you can until you hear the outfielder call you off. Nico, while you were running, going back, and you're looking at the video right now, the Diamond Vision, did you hear him at all?
No, neither of us had anything right there. But yeah, I mean, you go until you hear something there, but some plays, neither of you have it.
Yeah.
That's how you're supposed to do it, with the outfielder going low and me going high. Just not quite there.
Slow roller. Here comes Dansby. He fires. That's it. Well, thanks very much.
All right, guys.
I'm glad nothing bad happened on that play.
That's the last play you want while you have a microphone in your ear. Life goes on.
Nico.
The full Nico Hoerner experience, if you will, at least from an audio standpoint. The huffing and puffing as he's running, trying to get the pop up. Yeah,
I knew this was going to happen one of these days. I am always nervous about that. And then it's like, it's on. I'm like, it's on. The Kyle Tucker's coming in. Nico's sprinting right out. You got PCA in the vicinity. I'm like, oh, man, is there going to be? And then, you know, Eduardo Perez said the right thing, but they couldn't be too critical in the moment because they've got the player right there. So, yeah, that was a moment. But guess what? Let him go after that. Let him go. That happens. Nico, we're going to let you go. We're going to let you settle in over there because the ball just dropped in, and we know that was a rough play for you.
I kind of like Nico Hoerner being mic'd up, though. I wanted more questions and answers.
I
think he can handle it. I don't think him being mic'd up affected that play. Did you? Is that how you took it? Is that how you saw things?
I don't think so. That's not my point. My point is, after that play happens, then they continued to talk to him before the inning ended. And that's the part where I was like, maybe let him go here. Maybe. Because I actually do enjoy the – it does stress me out a little bit watching it.
But does it only stress you out because it's a team that you want to see do well?
No. It's always.
It
could be anybody. And I'm always like, what's going to happen here if the ball – like if something crazy, chaotic happens, there's an error. What if an error – what if a ball went under his legs? Then what do you do? Then you just, I guess, laugh it off, I suppose, if you're Nico Hoerner.
not against the Dodgers in that series.
Yeah. So it finally happened. But, hey, the most important part of that play was what I was really thinking was, good God, man, is somebody going to get hurt? You've got three of your most valuable players converging on a ball. We've seen it before, and those are some of the ugliest incidents you could see in baseball.
They look like WWE moves when they collide because somebody gets clotheslined or something along those lines when the collision, because you're coming full speed from different angles.
Right.
And legs get just taken out.
Yeah. We sure wouldn't be talking about the Kyle Tucker extension if something had happened.
Is that a message to Kyle Tucker? Just sign whatever they give you because you need something before you get hurt?
Hey, actually, he made a great, just to add to the resume as we all go crazy for Kyle, he did make, was it Saturday, he made a great on Mookie Betts. He made a great diving play in one of those games. Oh yeah, it was the Saturday game, the 16-0 game,
the 16-0,
the 16-0. He laid out and made so like add the elite defense now to his elite back.
He's a 5-tool player.
He's a 5-tool player.
That's right. That's what 5-tool players do.
Yes. Yeah, you're gonna make plays.
Do the Cubs have a got it problem though? Like got it? Because PCA, he's gonna run into everybody. It feels like every game he's gonna like kill Ian Happ. Well, and then in that one
problems.
Play,
there's been problems.
There's a fact that
my column.
He's not. Look forward to reading that column. But listen, there's you know your personnel, right? You know your teammates. PCA probably feels like he could chase down anything.
Absolutely.
So you got to be loud with your got it. So that they might have a got it problem.
That was like your guy Luis Robert. Remember, he used to try to take everything from Aloy, which to us was acceptable. Aloy, you just go over there, play in the net, do whatever you're doing, let Luis Robert. But there were back-to-back games earlier this year where Hap and PCA did have communication issues and had to kind of talk, like not a big deal, like they're fighting or something, but they're still to some degree figuring things out in the outfield.
You can always tell after a play like that how much time they're spending talking to each other after the play. That's very much telling you how much they are or are not on the same
page.
Well,
players never really talk too much on the field. They'll take it back to the dugout and then discuss because they're kind of embarrassed at them in the moment.
Speaking of being on the same page, right now, Mark Grody and I will extend our page to another page.
Oh, nice.
This is what we do. It's called Transition. It's with Matt Spiegel and Lawrence Holmes next right here on 670 The Score.